All right, we are live with Alexander McCurse in London. Alexander, how you doing?
I'm doing very well and delighted to be here again on this live stream. And my goodness, we've got a lot to discuss.
What should we talk about today, Alexander?
Well, there's a few minor conflicts going on in various parts of the world. Venezuela, some news from Ukraine, nothing important.
Yeah, a lot of stuff to go over. A lot of
Absolutely.
developments, yeah.
Including, I mean, the ECB finally, I think, killing off Ursula's and Merz's 140 billion euro plan.
They refuse to backstop it,
They
huh?
refuse to backstop it, exactly. And that's decisive. But I mean, there are other things going on which are
Well, EU.
at least as important. Yeah, carry on.
Yeah, EU member states are also saying that they won't provide what they call blank check guarantees. I don't understand, Alexander. I thought that Ursula is assuring all the EU member states that this is completely legal, seizing Russian frozen assets. Completely legal, she says. So why are EU member states afraid to provide guarantees?
Indeed, and the financial genius Friedrich Merz says the same thing. But notice that he's not prepared to provide the guarantees either. I mean, there you go. I mean, the reality is it is completely illegal, which is what the Belgian government is saying, what Euroclear is saying, what the ECB are now saying, all of them saying the same thing. And it's incredible that this thing has gone as long as and has been taken as far as it has been. It tells you an awful lot about the type of people who are running things in Brussels and about the commentariat in the West and about the European governments and the British government and all of them, how obsessed and fanatical they are about Project Ukraine, how desperate they are, the extent to which they've run out of money, and how reckless they are too. Anyway, now, and I think this is a key thing to say, if this plan were ever floated, if were ever put into place, then any legal case brought
They're
outside the
cooked.
European Union is
They're
lost.
cooked. They
They're
are
cooked.
cooked.
They're
Yeah,
cooked.
no doubt about it.
Exactly.
No doubt about it. It's incredible that that the leadership in Brussels, they're located in Brussels, that their plan is to put all of the blame, all of the accountability and responsibility on Belgium. They get all of the benefit, they get all of the upside. We get to take the frozen assets, we get to hand them over to Zelensky, all of these things. But who's on the hook? The
Belgium.
Belgium government and the people of Belgium. That
Exactly.
says it all, as they're located in Belgium.
I mean, it is, anyway, there we go.
Anyway, that's
But
one
that's
of
a
the big
big, that,
stories.
that, that is one of the big stories, and no doubt we'll talk about
All right.
that, but there's lots of other things to discuss.
So let's jump into it. But before we get started, let's just say a quick hello to everyone that is watching us on Rockfin, on Odyssey, on Rumble, and on the Duran.locals.com. Hello to everyone in the locals community and to everyone that is watching us on YouTube, to our moderators on YouTube who are helping out in the chat. We've got Peter moderating, and who else? I think it's just me and you, Peter, today to moderate the Oh, and Harry is also in there. What's up, Harry? Hope you are doing well. Alexander, let's give a like to this live stream. Hit that like. I like it a lot. And share the video, subscribe to the channel. Alexander, should we start out with Ukraine? Should we start out with Venezuela? The Trump White House, they held I guess you could say a war room, war party meeting yesterday in the Oval Office to decide what's next in Venezuela. We have Witkoff on the way to Moscow. He was in Ireland. By the way, the Irish government decided to give Zelensky another 125 million. So that's another 125 million down the golden toilet, flushed down the golden toilet. But Zelensky was also in Ireland. So you have to imagine that Witkoff and Zelensky met. There are rumors. I have not been able to confirm this. But there are rumors which claim that Zaluzhny has shown up in Kiev. These are just rumors. I want to stress this. Rumors could be in London still, but there are some some reports saying that he is in Kiev. And he wrote an interesting piece in the Telegraph. There are also MPs in the Rada who are calling on Zelensky to step down by the middle of December, latest by January 1st. Witkoff is going to present to Putin the Trump plan officially. He's going to present the Trump 28-point peace plan or 22-point peace plan or 19-point peace plan or 119-point peace plan, whatever. He's going to present the big peace plan to Russia. So anyway, I'll leave it up to you, Alexander. Where do you want to begin?
Well, I think the first place to begin actually is the military situation, because we had a meeting yesterday of Putin and his military chiefs, or at least three of them, Gerasimov and the two military commanders. One was responsible for the fighting in places like Liman and Kupiansk and all of these places. And the other was, one was responsible, to be precise, for Pokrovsk, and the other was responsible for Zaporozhye. And they all both delivered reports. And there's a very interesting video, by the way, in which you can see them doing it. And, of course, the Russians say that they have now captured Pokrovsk and that they have also captured Volchansk, which is in Kharkiv region. Two important towns, announcement made in one day. And I'm just going to say that just to pat myself on the back. In my last program, the one I made yesterday, before this announcement, I said that I thought the Russians were about to announce the capture of Pokrovsk, because I noticed that all references to Pokrovsk had been deleted from the Russian Defense Ministry's daily update, which suggested a big announcement was coming. Now, first of all, I think I should say that the Ukrainians are denying all of these claims. They claim that they still hold Kupiansk, they still hold Pokrovsk. Zelensky says that the Ukrainians won a great battle in Kupiansk. I mean, I think nobody takes any of that seriously. Nobody with any particle of sense or feel for the reality takes it seriously. But this is big news. Pokrovsk falling, Mirnograd soon to fall, the Russians steamrolling through Zaporozhye region. Putin got a report about that. And Putin also said all kinds of things about the regime in Kiev. He called it a junta. I mean, that was something that the Russians used to call the post-Maidan government back in 2014. And then they went for a long time, they stopped referring to it by that name. But now Putin has revived that term. And to be honest, I mean, I was listening to him and watching him. He didn't seem to me to be in any mood to make any significant compromises or concessions. And obviously, he feels the military situation is going very, very strongly his way, which it is, indisputably. And Peskov, his spokesman today, was saying we've got to address the root causes. That means absolute no NATO entry. That is absolutely fundamental. We've also got to rule out categorically the presence of Western troops in any shape or form in Ukraine. This was Peskov this morning in advance of Witkoff coming. And Peskov said there's an awful lot of other things to discuss too. So you could see that the Russians are making clear that, you know, at the moment it's Istanbul plus or nothing. And by the way, Putin was also, I think, again, making clear Zaporozhye and Kherson regions are Russian and they must be transferred to Russia in their entirety. So the Russians are hardening their positions, or at least they're making their position absolutely clear that it's as hard as it has always been. And this is what brings us back to the negotiations, because it was very, very interesting what happened in Florida. There's now definite confirmation that what we discussed in our program, which we published yesterday on the Duran, that Budanov was not present at the key meeting, is true, that Budanov was frozen out. It seems the Ukrainians gave no grounds at all on any of the big issues, withdrawal from Donbass, NATO membership, changes to their constitution, all of that kind of thing. The photos, the photo study of the meeting showed, well, frankly, depressed and angry faces on both sides. So now we get these rumors, which, by the way, you've just informed me of. I didn't know them before we made this program, that Zelensky is in Kiev.
Rumor.
It is a rumor.
That's a rumor. Yeah.
But Witkoff is in Ireland. And if you think it's a coincidence that he's in Ireland when Zelensky is there, then I have a bridge to sell you. As we discussed briefly just before we started this program, as you said to me, it looks to me, and I think you're absolutely right to say this, that Witkoff is giving Zelensky his marching orders. He's telling him, look, this is hopeless. The Europeans can't provide any money. We can't provide any weapons. You are losing badly on the battlefronts. We have to do this deal. You are obviously incapable of doing this deal. Putin shows, is making it clear that he does not want to deal with you. You must step down and go. And whom are we going to put in your place? Well, we've got this wonderful, amazing, heroic general, General Zelensky. He's trusted by the Ukrainian people. He's beloved by the army. So he's coming to Kiev, perhaps. We don't know this for certain. And he's perhaps talking to the various people there. And anyway, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, the man who the BBC claims masterminded Nord Stream sabotage.
Absolutely, yeah. Right, and the Germans too, by the way.
I mean, the Germans say it too. Yeah, okay. Too. I mean, yeah. Make him president, sure. Yeah, why not? The man who led the 2023 super duper counteroffensive, right?
That's right. The Napoleon of our time.
Right. Zelensky. Yeah, the myth of Zelensky, which is really just a myth. Yeah. Anyway, okay. So look. I have to disagree with you on Pokrovsk. Pokrovsk is insignificant.
Absolutely.
So it's not really a big victory there.
No.
Mirnograd, also insignificant. And also Volchansk, which they announced that they've captured. Yeah. That is also insignificant. Kuliapoli, which will probably be announced in about a week or two, I imagine.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, that's they're making a lot of progress there, but Kuliapoli also insignificant.
Absolutely.
Anyway, all right. Putin also didn't Putin also announce that in the north they need to create more of a buffer?
Yes,
I think he announced that as well. Sumy, Kharkov, that area.
Exactly, he did. I mean, there was a lot of discussion about that. Of course, we didn't have the commander from Group of Forces North actually there, so he didn't provide a full military update. But clearly, I'm going to make a guess. At some point, Putin will be going north. And he'll be meeting with that particular commander and he'll be hearing a report, because it's clear the Russians are going to expand the territory that they control in Kharkov region very extensively over the next few weeks. By the way, I mean, the aggregate story here is of a military collapse. It's not slow motion anymore, by the way, either. This is a myth that the Institute for the Study of War continues to plug. And by the way, when the Institute of the Study of War says that the Russians control only 19.2% of Ukrainian territory and that they made hardly any progress, bear in mind they're getting their information, or at least they're basing all of that on what the Ukrainian General Staff and Deep State, the Ukrainian channel, which is controlled ultimately by the General Staff, are saying. And of course, they don't show Russian gains. And the most they ever do is that they show a lot of the recent Russian gains as being gray zone, in other words, contested, which is one way of avoiding admitting that the Russians are taking these places and are advancing.
How does Zelensky make anything better?
Well, he doesn't. I mean,
how would anyone actually, not even,
well,
let's not even put the blame on anyone. How would anyone make anything better?
Zelensky is perhaps a rather more, shall we say, well, conventional person than Zelensky is. I mean, he comes across as a little bit more, more like what you'd expect a president to look like. There's a lot of discussion, though, that his behavior is often very buffoonish as well, just to say. So, I mean, there's that side of it.
It's true.
Well.
It's true. He posts a lot of ridiculous photos on Instagram.
Absolutely.
And social media. Yeah.
Exactly. But anyway, but I mean, you know, probably what we'll have is a brief burst of euphoria around Zaluzhny's appointment. And then, of course, it would become obvious that he's actually incapable of changing anything, that the crisis in Ukraine continues to deepen. And in a month, probably just that, everything will be as bad as ever, perhaps worse, because Zelensky has been president of Ukraine for a couple of years now, quite a while now. He was Churchill. He was, you know, all of that. He was, you know, the heroic leader. He was also elected. I mean, he had been elected long ago. Who would have elected Zaluzhny to anything or appointed Zaluzhny to anything? So he would lack legitimacy and he would lack, legality. And it would be a coup. And have another coup. You could argue, you know, 2014 Maidan was a coup, but they did at least hold elections afterwards. This time, I can't imagine that they would risk holding elections. So the whole thing would become, you know, even more precarious and unstable than it has been already. So because when you have one coup, it's very easy to launch another.
Yeah. Trump is still trying to get a freeze, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what the 28 points ultimately basically are. So
Wyckoff is going to present some plan. What do you think will be in that plan?
Well,
do you think it will be Istanbul plus root causes, or it will try to trick Russia into agreeing to some sort of a freeze scenario?
What I have seen of the 28 points is that they are basically a attempt to sort of cobble together something, taking bits and bobs from Istanbul Plus and bits and bobs from Kellogg's plan and bits and bobs from the European plan. I would say that it's two-thirds tilted towards the Europeans and the Ukrainians, one-third, an important third, tilted towards the Russians. So, I mean, the Russians have already made it clear that in its present form, it's unacceptable. What they said, what Putin himself has said is, look, it is something we can negotiate on. We can actually meet and we can talk about this. Kellogg's plan was unacceptable in and of and entirely by itself. So there was nothing there that we could talk about. But we do have some movement in these 28 points towards our position about NATO membership, about capping the size of the Ukrainian military, about those sort of things. But it is unacceptable at the moment.
From Josie on Locals. Good day, Alex and Alexander. If each new U.S. administration can simply disown the commitments of the previous one, why should Russia or any country trust agreements with Washington? We see it again now. Trump calls the conflict Biden's war, as if responsibility resets with every president. And the Bush-Baker assurances to Gorbachev about NATO non-expansion were later denied or reinterpreted by later U.S. governments. Thank you. Just to add on to that, Alexander, we are getting news that the U.S. may propose to Russia that forget about Ukraine and the whole NATO is enshrined in their constitution. Let them keep it in their constitution. What we're going to guarantee to you, Russia, is that NATO will make an assurance that Ukraine never gets into the alliance. Why should Russia believe any of that stuff?
Well, they won't.
Or maybe even a better question to you, legally, is there a way to make it so that Ukraine never enters NATO, at least from the Russian side of things? Is there a process or a mechanism legally which would say, look, Ukraine never gets into NATO, and if you guys decide to pull that back, to roll that all back, then you face X, Y, and Z repercussions or punishment?
Well,
so we have Josie's question, and then we have the
And I would add to Josie's question the JCPOA, which is an agreement, a formal agreement made by the United States and Iran, backed by the UN Security Council.
And they just rolled it all back.
I mean, Trump just walked away from it. And they walked away from the ABM treaty, and they walked away from the INF treaty, and all of these things. And Josie is absolutely right. Nikolai Azarov, who was Yanukovych's prime minister, and who is now in exile in Moscow, said it very simply. The only way you can guarantee that Ukraine will never join NATO is through regime change in Kiev. That's the only way it can be done. In other words, create a political structure in Kiev itself, which excludes forever the possibility of regime change in Ukraine. Oh, sorry, of Ukraine joining NATO, accession to NATO. And that, I have to say, I mean, it's what Medvedev is saying. It's what all sorts of people in Russia are saying. And I suspect ultimately we'll come to that.
Is there any legal mechanism that you can put in place? Something more than the JCPOA? I'm thinking the JCPOA approved by, ratified by the UN, by the Security Councils, by everything.
And the ABM treaty was ratified by the UN, by the US Senate, and they walked out of that. So I don't know how it can be done. This is the real problem anybody who has to deal with the United States has to face. And Josie's absolutely right. No administration is ever bound by what was said by the previous administration. Now, there will be some people in Russia who will say, and there will be people who want to move forward with some kind of peace deal, who will say that the only guarantor, the real guarantor, is not even regime change in Kiev. It is the Russian army. It is, if we have a powerful army and we make it absolutely clear that the moment this whole thing is walked back, the war resumes, then that might stick. I'm very far from convinced that that's the case. And to be honest and to be frank, I don't think Putin is thinking that way.
Yeah. Federalized Ukraine. We talked about we did a video maybe even two, three years ago where we said that perhaps the only solution would be some sort of a federalization structure,
which would be a kind of regime change. Now the thing to understand about federalization is that it was first proposed by Angela Merkel and then accepted by the Russians in a meeting they had with the then US Secretary of State John Kerry in London. And there is actually a joint US-Russia statement from that time, made in March 2014, in which both governments said that they supported federalization. Then, of course, the Ukrainians said no, and it was all walked back. I think federalization is absolutely a possibility and something the Russians might very well bring up in the negotiations. Because to be very clear again, what is going to happen, the most that is going to happen, I think, out of this meeting today, is that the Russians might say, look, there is enough to work with here. We are prepared to sit down and talk. This is our negotiating team led by the foreign ministry, as Putin has said. Ushakov will be a member. Medinsky will be a member. Who are your negotiators? Please provide us with details of your negotiators and we can agree a meeting place and the first day for a plenary session to be held.
The U.S. negotiators, not Ukraine.
U.S. negotiators, exactly.
Which US immediately makes it a U.S.-Russia negotiation.
Absolutely, which is fine, because as the U.S. has itself admitted, this is a proxy war between the U.S. and Russia. Marco Rubio said that almost as soon as he became Secretary of State.
Yeah. Harry C. Smith says, I suspect only when Ukraine loses its whole coastline will NATO all of a sudden lose all interest in taking it.
Yes, I agree. I completely agree.
Andrew says, thank you, gentlemen. You are the best source for news and analysis available. Thank you for that, Andrew. Mama Alaska says, great analysis as always. Thank you, gentlemen. And from Sticky Marks, hi, will Secretary of War Hegseth be held accountable for double tapping the survivors? More like the Wild West, as Van de Crazy reminds the U.S. ad nauseum, our Western democratic values, now bandits. you know, LNPs. It's still crazy love X. A good segue into Venezuela, actually.
Yeah, absolutely, so, yeah. Absolutely. Can I just first of all answer the question? I first of all, I agree. I think this is completely illegal. I think this is indeed murder on the seas. If these people were criminals, then go and arrest them. To attack them twice, as some of them were trying to, you know, save their lives, is pointless and unnecessary, and I think clearly illegal. And apparently there have been legal advice given by Pentagon lawyers saying this, which Hegseth and the administration are disregarding. Now, I think they are walking, legally speaking, on very thin ice here. And of course, if the situation with Venezuela is unresolved and the Democrats win the midterms next year, I can very easily see investigations and proceedings and legal proceedings being launched about this, perhaps even impeachment proceedings against Hegseth and other officials. Well, I don't know about impeachment proceedings because they're not elected, but I can absolutely see legal action being taken over this. So not because the Democrats care about the fact that people were killed on the high seas, but because this is an excellent tool to use against Trump and his officials. So I think they are treading on thin ice. But of course, this also increases the pressure for them to achieve regime change, right, on Venezuela. Because how do they avoid these potential legal challenges? By getting Machado made president of Venezuela, and she comes back and she says he's absolutely fine and okay, these were bad people and the United States did entirely the right thing.
Yeah, that's the problem that the Trump White House has put itself in. Yeah. You're going to have the Democrats, the entire Uniparty, mm-hmm, they're going to cheer on the regime change, cheer on the military operation, while at the same time, once the midterms are over, if the Democrats do take the House and or the Senate, they're going to go after Trump over issues like what happened with the double tap of these boats, and also with Ukraine.
Yes,
this is the problem that Trump now has. They're going to make it difficult for him to walk away from war, while at the same time going after him.
Yeah,
because of all of the foreign, exactly, policy that he's been conducting.
Exactly.
The failed foreign policy and conflicts, exactly, that he's been conducting. Yeah. Yeah, he put himself in this mess.
Yes.
Sparky says, great work. Keep on trucking. Rockabilly 9113. Thank you for that super chat. Lana Zenkova Garcia says, thank you, Duran. And welcome to OG Wall, to the Duran community. Thank you for joining. Thank you, J-Rock, J-Law, 1, Akadi, and also Medi833 for joining the Durant community. Golden Sun 7262 says, hello from A2 Michigan. And Sparky says, President Putin should emphasize to President Trump how great the Trump tunnel under the Bering Strait would be, might help Trump's focus.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, by the way, I'm told it's doable. I did about a tunnel, but certainly a bridge. I'm told that it is absolutely doable, from an engineering and architectural point of view. So
Zariel says, Larry and I keep saying his boat story is BS.
No,
true or not true? He's in this mess now. So Trump having a meeting in the White House in the Oval Office.
No.
About the next steps for Venezuela, a war party meeting.
Well, it is.
What do you think is going on? The report was that on November 30th, Alexander, that was when Trump gave the ultimatum to Maduro.
Yes.
And he told him you have until Friday, last Friday, yes, November 30th, 29th or 30th, to leave.
Yeah.
And it was a 15-minute phone call, according to reports, if you believe it or not. I don't believe it, but they say that they claim that Maduro made an offer to Trump that he will leave if he's granted full amnesty. Trump refused. That's what the mainstream media is reporting. I don't buy it. But anyway, that's the information that we have. And then we have the reports that he held this war party meeting with Rubio, Hegseth, Susie Wiles, Stephen Miller, all these, all his inner circle.
Exactly, which does look like a war council, and probably was the moment when the decision to go ahead was made. There is clearly dissension within the administration about this. There are some people who are not keen on it, but I think the momentum now is so overwhelmingly strong that I just can't see how it can be stopped. And Brazil, by the way, is now starting to make noises about this. I was expecting that they would, and now they have. And if there is an attack, apparently they're saying that they will speak out more loudly from this point.
Is there going to be an attack?
Yes, I think there is. I thought so mostly all along. I mean, there'd been moments when it looked as if they were walking it back, but the momentum to do it is absolutely there. And I think there's something else at play here, which is that Trump needs a win. The last few months have been bad for him, so he's very, very keen on a win. And the US, at least some people in the US, probably think they need a win because they're losing in Ukraine. So they have to somehow, as they probably psychologically say to themselves, we've got to show that we're still strong.
Hmm. We did a video on Venezuela, which will go up probably today or either tomorrow morning. But I asked you this question in the video. I'll ask it to you again. What if Maduro does leave?
Yeah,
I'm not saying these reports are true. I don't believe them, but let's just say he does exit. Then what?
There would presumably be an interim government and new elections, and they would probably be arranged so as to make Machado the new president. But to repeat what we said in that program, Machado gives me the impression of being very much like, you know, the Bourbons after the French Revolution. She's learnt nothing and forgotten nothing. I think she still believes that this whole business of Chavez and Maduro was a bad dream, that what we need to do is to go back to the wonderful state that Venezuela was in before that horrible man, Hugo Chavez, won the election. And I think what she's going to discover very, very, very quickly is that Venezuela, for all the massive problems that we've seen build up since Chavez's time, has changed fundamentally, and that she cannot go back to the kind of system that existed before. So we will probably see instability and chaos. And of course, there'll be lots of people who will question her legitimacy as well, because one way or the other, she will be seen as having been installed by the United States. And I suspect that instability will grow and things will perhaps spiral out of control before long.
I think the pardon of Hernandez, of the former Honduran president, was basically Trump revealing that this operation has nothing to do with narcotics.
Yes, I think that's exactly what it was.
In his weird way. It
was a brazen, in-your-face statement to the world that actually this is all about geopolitics. It's about removing Maduro, destroying a BRICS-friendly government, reasserting American control over the Western Hemisphere, and preparing for the next thing, which is Cuba.
A lot of analysts, I've been watching some other analysts talk about Venezuela, and a lot of analysts can't figure out what else is there outside of the oil and perhaps Rubio and Trump's ego to finally remove Maduro. Because the analysis is, if it was just about the oil, well, Grinnell allegedly had a deal for all the oil.
Yes.
Right? So why go through the process of removing Maduro? Is it just about Trump and Rubio's ego? It's much more than that. I mean, it's the oil is, I think, the major factor, the main factor. The ego from Rubio and Trump is playing a part, right? Unfinished business, you could say, for Trump from his first term with the whole Guaido embarrassment and fiasco. And it was an embarrassment and fiasco for Trump. Let's not forget that Trump, as he was giving the State of the Union, actually had Guaido in attendance and hailed him as the president of Venezuela. And it looked really, really embarrassing and stupid. Mm. So I mean, there's that kind of sentiment from Trump. I'm positive. And of course, Rubio, that's obvious why he wants to, for his own reasons, why he wants to remove Maduro. But there's also issues like BRICS, Cuba, oil to Cuba. Yeah. I don't know if you want to mention some of that.
Well, I will very quickly. I mean, Cuba used to get its oil from the Soviet Union, and that was what kept Cuba afloat during the Cold War. And in fact, Cuba got enormous amount of economic assistance from the Soviet Union. Then the Soviet Union collapsed. Yeltsin stopped all further economic aid to Cuba. Cuba went through a deep economic crisis. Then Chavez was elected president of Venezuela, and he started to supply Cuba with, I believe, free oil. I mean, so, you know, Cuba gets free oil from Venezuela now. So this has been Cuba's economic lifeline. It's enabled Cuba to keep its economy at least at a functional level. Now, the Russians some years ago came back to the Cubans and said, look, really, do you really want to continue this relationship? Venezuela is unstable. The government there might fall. The United States is coming after it. We are prepared to come back. We are prepared to provide you with oil. And the Cubans apparently said no. And the reason they said no was because they had this relationship with Venezuela. By the way, there are a lot of Cuban advisors and officials in Venezuela, and apparently they are involved in the military there as well. So the Cubans said, look, we've got this very strong relationship with Venezuela. We trust the regime there, and beyond which we get our oil from Venezuela for either a lower price or for free, whereas the oil which you will supply us will come with a price. And we don't have the same trust in you. I mean, they didn't say this, but that's always in the background. We don't trust you in the same way that we do the Venezuelans, because before you dropped us in the 90s, and that caused an economic crisis, whereas with the Venezuelans, we have this extremely strong and very trusting relationship. So the Cubans said no. And of course, if the United States now takes over Venezuela, stops the oil deliveries to Cuba, that will create a major economic crisis in Cuba, which is in bad shape economically anyway. Now, what they can do, and what I think the Russians have said, is that they would be prepared to provide emergency aid to Cuba. But it would have to be a major U-turn, and it would have to be carried out very fast.
Yeah, okay. So not many people are talking about the oil connection between Venezuela and Cuba. Yeah. From locals, Old Slow says, will the U.S. ever be able to break the stranglehold that the deep state has on the American political system after being there for the last 70 years?
Well, you know what I always say, a council of despair is a bad council. At some point, in some way, it will be broken. I mean, one can definitely see now, it's become obvious over the last 20, 30 years that more and more people in the US both are aware of the fact that there is a deep state and are becoming increasingly hostile to it. So at some point, the political pressure will become too strong. But clearly, this is going to be a long, difficult battle. The deep state has many, many levers to pull. And of course, it also has a lot of support within certain sections of American society, you know, some of the billionaires, all of those sorts of people.
Heals our strength. Welcome to the Drank community. Danielle says, Alex, what is the feeling in Bulgaria about the move to the euro? I would say most people are pessimistic, but I did talk to a lot of people who are saying that, yeah, it might not be so great, but we've already gone through the inflation, so it's not going to be such a tragic shift. I tried to tell them, no, it's going to be bad.
Yes.
Just because you've already gone through an inflation cycle doesn't mean that when the euro is introduced, the prices are not going to go up any further. No, they're going to go up.
Yeah.
And all the salaries will stay the same.
Yeah. I mean, the inflation is the least of it. Yeah. But you see, the trouble is there is never any debate, serious debate allowed about these things. So what happened in Greece and Cyprus is receding into the past. It's a long time ago now, more than 10 years ago. Most people don't know it. It's not talked about. So people don't actually understand what control of the euro by a central bank in Brussels actually means.
Yeah, it's a loss of sovereignty, plain and simple. Absolutely. If you don't control your money, you don't control anything.
Absolutely.
It's that simple. So Laris Jane says, any suggestions for movies about the Soviet?
The Soviet?
Soviet Union, probably, I guess, or the Soviet history?
I mean, if I may say so, I mean, the Soviet Union and Russia is one of the greatest producers of films that you can possibly find. I mean, they are they churned out films, and whatever you may think of the political content of some of them, they are always and invariably at a cinematic level of a very, very high standard. Just to give an example, just the other day, purely as a piece of history, I was watching a film about the Battle of Stalingrad, which was made in the Soviet Union in 1948, when Stalin was still alive. And of course, Stalin features heavily in it. And it was very interesting, both about what he said about the battle, but also in getting a sense of how Stalin was projected to the Soviet people at that time, which is somewhat different from the popular image of it. It's a big topic, one for a discussion at some other time. But there is a company in the United States called International Historic Films, who you can buy Soviet films from, DVDs of them, and those are very interesting. And you can also go to YouTube and Mosfilm, which is the Soviet film, big film studio. They actually put up many of their films for free on YouTube on their channel. So you can watch with subtitles films, Soviet films for free, and Russian films for free. And by the way, modern contemporary Russian cinema is very good and getting better.
Mosfilm, M-O-S.
M-O-S-F-I-L-M.
Mosfilm. All right. Haruko, thank you for that super chat. Erica Lakin says, thank you for giving the real news inside. And Jamila says, hi, gentlemen. Thank you for your great work. I'm desperate with Russia because they're very strong, but should have finished years ago.
Now, well, I know everybody says this all the time. I discussed this many, many times in many, many places. A few things to say. Firstly, please remember that Russia has not just been fighting Ukraine. It would have been just been fighting Ukraine. It would have been over in the summer of 2022. And Ukraine anyway was ready to sign the Istanbul Agreement, which basically satisfied Russian demands. And if they had not signed it, the Russians would have won the war very quickly. They've had to fight the whole collective West. We know about the fact that the enormous arms deliveries that have been given, sent by the West there. And we've also known about the role that the United States itself has played. Generals, US generals commanding Ukrainian armies, missiles provided, intelligence provided, all of that kind of thing. But secondly, and this is, I've actually written a long article about this on our Substack page. The way the Russians have fought the war, grinding the Ukrainians down, ensures that when the Russians win, they will win a total victory. Now, I would just suggest you go to that and you will see it. So I don't agree that this could have been done faster. I think given the extent of Western support, very difficult to see how it could have been done. And you mustn't underestimate, by the way, the size of Ukraine, a huge country, a modern society in some respects, a large population in some respects. So I think the Russians have done this actually quite well.
Iranian Kiddo says it was never about oil. Iraq wasn't about oil either, contrary to popular belief. For the empire, it is just a matter of principle to remove unruly nations.
I think there is a lot of truth in that point, actually. And I think especially in Latin America, where some people in the United States, and in the deep state especially, see Latin America, the Western Hemisphere, as their particular backyard and sphere of influence, I think that is particularly true.
Humming Pylon says, are security guarantees for Ukraine a hard reality? I don't see how it can get guarantees. Promises and signed documents, yes, but not guarantees.
Well, what do guarantees even mean for Ukraine? I mean, do they mean that the United States is going to war to defend Ukraine? Because we see that they haven't done it. I mean, the whole thing is a spoiler.
It's a spoiler.
it's intended to prevent a peace agreement being reached. It's done with no honesty.
Yeah, the security guarantee should have been neutrality.
Exactly.
And trade with Russia.
Exactly.
Doesn't mean you don't trade with Europe either, but it should have been, we're not going to get involved in any alliances, and we're going to continue to trade and be friendly with Russia. And yes, we'll be friendly with Europe as well. That would have been the best security guarantee.
Correct.
Yeah. Sticky Mark says, Alex Craner, I think, says the Venezuelan reserves, the banksters intend to monetize them. Shame on us. Thanks, lads.
Well, aren't they all in London and haven't they already been seized? I mean, I that's all I'm saying. I mean, I don't know much about this.
I think the gold in London,
The gold in London has been seized, certainly,
Game of Chair says, was Budanov possibly negotiating his own pardon when he met his counterpart given the current situation?
A very interesting question. That whole meeting in Abu Dhabi begs many, many questions to which there are no simple answers, just to say. And I think it was about the dirty war. And it may have been that Budanov was doing something like that. And it's an interesting idea. But we don't ultimately know. And this has caused a lot of embarrassment in Moscow, by the way, the revelation about this meeting.
From locals, Pete Ted says the planned destruction of Venezuela is surely multifaceted. The Monroe Doctrine, integration of other American nations with economic systems outside the American continent will not be allowed. Nations who contravene this rule will be punished. The threat of the good example of alternative economic and social models, which put the U.S.-American model must not be allowed, put the U.S.-American model in bad light, must not be allowed to persist. And the strategy of tension between the U.S. and other American nations forces them into a Cold War siege.
I think that's a very good summary altogether. Now, of course, I mean, to be clear, when they all meet in the Oval Office, they don't talk about all of these things. But you, I think, have set out well the sort of ideas, if you like, that shape the minds of the policymakers in the United States who are making these decisions.
Yeah, I imagine the policymakers are thinking like this. I imagine what they present to Trump is more along the lines of Maduro bad.
Yeah.
Take him out, get the oil, hurt China, hurt Cuba. Are you okay with this? And Trump probably says, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
As Zariel says, what are your both opinions on Turkey rejoining the EU?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen because the opposition within the EU, especially in Germany, by the way, is very, very strong. So I don't think it's going to happen straightforwardly. This has been a story I've been hearing about since the 60s. When I was a child, I can remember hearing all about this.
Yeah. Francis Bluebop says, Alexander, what is your reaction to the re-election of Paul Biya?
I don't know about this. Where was this? This is where? Sorry.
Paul Biya.
Biya.
I'll look it up. Jamila says, I forgot to ask you, gentlemen, if Russia and Ukraine war finished, then what about the Europeans?
Well, what about the Europeans? It's been very interesting, actually, because I've been reading articles appearing in all parts of the world, in Chinese media, in Russian media, in US media, talking about the irrelevance of Europe, how Europe has been marginalized, how this has exposed the feebleness of Europe today, how the mighty have fallen, how the Europe of the past has crashed. There was even articles saying this thing in William Buckley's magazine, A National Review, which is, of course, the absolute, pole center of neoconism. So this is a humiliation for Europe. I mean, it has exposed the extent to which it's been enfeebled and reduced in power and has become marginalized. But they've done this to themselves. If they appoint someone like Kaya Kallas as their high representative, if they pursue these weird policies, then of course this is the outcome that they're going to get. until and unless this changes, then we're going to continue to see Europe becoming more marginalized, deindustrialized. It's going to become an economic backwater. And frankly, the rest of the world is going to see it as an attractive museum and nothing else.
Paul Biya, the Cameroon president.
Oh, right.
Okay. Early November, he won his eighth term.
President.
He's 92 years old.
92 years old, yeah. And he's one of these absolutely. Well, I mean, I don't know very much about Cameroon, to be quite honest, but everything about him, everything I've heard, I've heard a bit about Cameroon, that the government there is very, very close to the US and is basically very much aligned with the globalist and neocon system. So completely unsurprising, I suppose, that he's still there.
Iranian Kiddo says, I recommend Sergei Einstein film, Silent Films, the propaganda Soviet films of the 20s, Strike, 10 Days That Shock the World, Battleship Potemkin, and his sound films, Alexander Nevsky, 1938, his first sound film, and Ivan the Terrible.
You're absolutely right. They are absolutely brilliant films. And to those, by the way, I would add El Viva Mexico, which my wife, Catherine, recently had to go to Mexico, and she did a presentation there comparing a novel by D.H. Lawrence called The Plumed Serpent with El Viva Mexico, which was Eisenstein's film about Mexico. He went there and he made a film about Mexico there, very little known because it was largely forgotten until the late 1970s. And it is brilliant. I mean, it gives you a sense of Mexico in the early 1930s, and it's astonishing.
Man for Today says, is Witkoff turning up just to say we're trying?
what he's trying more than that. I think he's going to try and move the dial with the Russians. I think the most he'll get is a commitment, as I said, to further talks.
Yeah. Alaric 4000 says, is the Russian goal to submit Ukraine into the Union state? And could Russia get Odessa by exchange for a different province?
Well, I don't think that the last really is an option, because I don't think the Russian constitution allows for giving and swapping territories in that sort of way. I think the Russians initially did not want Ukraine in the Union state. I think they saw the Ukrainians as extremely volatile and disruptive people, very much subject to Western influence and corrupt as well. I think now, as this situation evolves, those possibilities are probably becoming more interesting and attractive to some people in Moscow. That is the result of winning a war, by the way.
Trevor Watts says, can't thank you guys enough. John Ski says, would giving Ukraine nukes be the final game changer? LOL.
I think that is a disastrous idea. I mean, you're illusionally coming up with those. Mind you, I mean, let's be clear about this. Alex has made this point. He's absolutely right. That article in the Telegraph was not written by Zelensky. It was written by someone in London.
In London.
And I can guess who, by the way. I actually have an idea who it was. The specific individual in question, but I'm not going to discuss in this program. But it was not written by Zelensky. Of that, I'm absolutely sure. Alex is completely right about that. But it's a disastrous idea. One of the reasons, one of the major triggers of the special military operation was a speech that Zelensky gave at that disastrous Munich Security Conference in February 2022, when he floated the idea of Ukraine getting nuclear weapons. And the Russians were horrified both by the suggestion and by the fact that nobody in the West pushed back against it. And denuclearization is one of the original objectives of the special military operation, and they will stick with it. That article was written in order to prolong the war. I think people need to understand this.
Yes. The article says as much.
Absolutely.
Basically says that we need a pause. Ukraine needs a pause it's in the title.
Yes.
To come back and defeat Putin. It's in the title.
Exactly.
We want a pause so we can come back later to defeat Putin.
Yes.
Yeah. Matthew says, would the EU ever strike Russia?
Yes, I think some people are mad enough to. I don't think that European populations are keen on this idea at all. And there are probably enough people in the military to understand what an absolute act of folly that would be. But yes, I mean, it isn't a Kaya Kallas, for example. I think she's absolutely capable of it.
Yeah. Irish Partisan says, Zelensky in Ireland today, the Irish government have committed an extra 150 million euros to support the grift. Meanwhile, 10,000 plus Irish are homeless.
Yes. Can I just say, first of all, that it's very good to have you back on the live streams and Irish Partisan. And thank you for coming. And thank you for all of the work, the great work.
And putting out great videos, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So just to say that. So, but you're absolutely right. By the way, he's also received, I believe, 114 million from Sweden as well. So they're all,
right. You know, Sweden also gave money.
Sweden has also given money. So there you go. All the usual suspects are still coughing up. But you're absolutely right. Ireland, I would have thought Ireland would be more sensible about this sort of thing. But there you go.
Yeah. And Witkoff, as we said in the beginning of the program. Witkoff is in Ireland. Zelensky's in Ireland. So something is up.
But think about something. Witkoff, maybe, I guess he is there to tell Zelensky, game is up. These are your marching orders. For God's sake, man, go. But the Irish, the Swedes, giving Zelensky money, even if it is not, by his standards, huge amounts of money, are telling Zelensky, we still back you, as did all of that performance in the Elysee, which took place just a day or so ago. So, you know, Zelensky will push back because he will.
And coming back to the point that Irish Partisan makes with the 10,000 Irish homeless, it's 150 million after a corruption scandal.
Yes.
Granted, 100 million corruption scandal to Zelensky is peanuts. It's a cup of coffee for him.
Yes.
But still, it's a corruption scandal.
Yes.
Obviously, there's more money involved in the corruption in Ukraine, a lot more money involved in the corruption in Ukraine that for various reasons the media and NABU are not investigating or talking about. But you're flushing this 150 million down the freaking golden toilet.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just incredible. Money that's gone. I was reading a quote from Ursula this morning, Alexander, from 2023.
Yeah.
Where she said, we're giving $50 billion to Ukraine as the EU, which will last it until 2027. That was her quote. It's going to take us all the way to 2027, this $50 billion. Where is that $50 billion? That was a statement she made in 2023.
Yeah.
As long as it takes speech.
Exactly. Unbelievable.
Matthew says, could there be conscription in the UK?
No. I think there would be massive opposition. It's been a very hard sell in Germany. And bear in mind, I mean, the Germans had conscription until fairly recently. In Britain, conscription was done away with in 1960. Bringing it back would be just, I can't imagine what the reaction would be if it was done here.
Matthew says, what are the chances of a preemptive EU strike? They're talking about it.
Oh, absolutely. Some an EU general's talked about this very thing. Again, one can't completely exclude it, given how unbalanced some of the people in Europe are and the rhetoric that they're engaging in now. So one can't exclude it. I still think that it won't happen. Medvedev actually dealt with this whole thing in a post he did about 2 months ago, in which he said, you know, it's not impossible that it could happen, given how irrational some of these people are. But he said he thinks that, you know, the sense of the need for self-preservation will ultimately prevail amongst European policymakers, physical self-preservation. And I think he's probably right.
Fractured01, thank you for the super sticker. From locals, Nikki Ball says, Alistair Crook claimed Netanyahu had severe health problems. Was that all fake on the part of Bibi?
No, I don't think it's fake. I think he does have problems. And of course, I mean, bear in mind, he is under tremendous stress. The latest word is that he's asked Herzog, the president, for a pardon. So it tells you how, you know, tough his life is at the moment. And when you are under stress, health problems tend to follow.
Monty 1054 says, what will Ukraine look like once the war is over, in your opinion? Will it be part of Russia or independent? Will it be able to recover? What will happen with Europe once the conflict is over?
I think there is a very high possibility that Ukraine will start to break up, that we're going to start to see more and more regions going their own way. If there is federalization, I would not be surprised if federalization was seen by some of the regions as basically a transitional point towards full union with Russia. So it's a distinct possibility. And there is also a possibility, though far from a certainty, and I don't think there's any unity about this in Moscow, that the Russians might decide that the simplest and most effective way to deal with the whole problem is to take over the lot. I think that was not the Russian plan in 2022. I don't think that was the Russian intention a year ago, but I think we're coming closer to that point now.
Matlis X says, where is Tulsi Gabbard? And where are the big Trump rallies in the US? Seems like Trump would be trying to rally his supporters going into midterms.
Well, the last point is an extremely good one. And I personally think that he does need to go out and meet with his people and listen to them. I mean, more listen to them now than speak to them, because he's drifting further and further away from them. And the whole strength, political strength of Donald Trump was precisely his connection with his base. And I don't think he understands, because he's isolated himself from them and prefers to the company of Susie Wiles and Lindsey Graham and all of these strange people. I don't think he understands the extent to which he has drifted away from them, and that they are, as a result, turning their backs on him. So he absolutely needs to go out and get a real sense of the real feeling in America. As for what was the other part of it? Sorry,
Find it.
Yes. Oh, Tulsi Gabbard. Absolutely.
Tulsi Gabbard, Where is Tulsi Gabbard?
Marginalized, I expect. I suspect she's focused on a few narrow issues, getting the truth out about Russiagate, for example, which is important, by the way. But I doubt that she actually has any great influence in the administration anymore.
Lisa says, what is your thoughts of Europe already preparing for war with Russia in 3 years? I live 20 minutes away from Wiesbaden. The army even gives talks in schools to 14 and 15 year olds to join the army and a job offer.
Yes, I know it does. I think all that is creating greater alarm and uncertainty and fear, and it's resulting in the boys who would be called up, migrating politically to the IFD and voting for the IFD, because they don't want to be drawn into a war. They don't. I mean, I know Germany quite well. I've been talking to people in Germany. I know young people in Germany, and this is what I hear from them, and I believe it. Now, as for Europe as a whole getting drawn into a war in 3 years, anybody who is familiar with the realities in Europe, the state of the armies, the state of the infrastructure in Europe, the state of the economies, the state of the armaments industries, know this is impossible. I mean, it cannot be done. I mean, even if there was a full mobilization economy and the overriding single-minded priority was given to rearmament, it could not be achieved within 3 years. It would be a massive undertaking requiring at least a decade and probably much more than that. So this 3 years is ridiculous. And by the way, I was reading an article by the German economist Wolfgang Münchau, and he pointed out that precisely because weapons do not add to the general prosperity, you must never, ever finance weapons production through debt. It can only be done through taxation. And he's absolutely right. It's an obvious point I never thought of.
True. Peters 9744 says, have pity on us we're in Dublin and Zelensky is in town. Pray for us.
Yeah, absolutely. We do pray for you.
Yes, we do. Iranian Kiddo says Eisenstein was an ideologically driven genius that used film editing to provoke intense emotional response in the audience, such as those juxtaposing shots in movie Strike 1925 between striking workers and cows being slaughtered.
I absolutely agree. And I would say that if you're talking about silent films, Eisenstein's silent films, Strike is my favorite of the three. I mean, they're all extraordinary. And as somebody who studied Russian history, 10 days, the October Revolution, October is an extraordinary film. And by the way, many of the scenes that people see and associate with the Russian Revolution actually are clips from October, from Eisenstein's film. So they're fiction, actually, but very, very well done fiction. But Strike is, in my opinion, his single greatest film of his silent era.
Iranian Kiddo says other notable movies about Soviet history, Burnt by the Sun, Dr. Zhivago, Reds, Ivan's Childhood, Stalker, Andrea Rublev, The Cranes Are Flying, Russian Ark, Ballad of a Soldier.
Ballad of a Soldier is a very, very great film, by the way. I've seen all of them. All of the films that you've listed are great films.
Two more. Come and See, of course, which is free on YouTube, actually.
Absolutely,
you can find that on YouTube as well. Yeah. And Moscow Don't Believe in Tears.
Yes.
All right. Excellent movie recommendations from Iranian Kiddo. And from Golden Sun, Ukraine, I smell laundry 100%.
Yeah, true enough.
Nitswitch says, will there come anything of significance, not to say something important, from the talks between Putin and Witkoff? Guesses?
Well, I think if we actually get negotiations properly set up between the United States and Russia, that is very significant. We will not have seen that happen since the Cold War.
Iranian Kiddo says, after all said and done, the empire seems to still be winning. U.S. striking two separate deals, each worth $35 billion, with Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan, India and China cutting their import of Russian oil.
I don't believe that India is cutting its imports of Russian oil, by the way. This is a long topic, but I've been looking into this, and I actually had a discussion with somebody about this. And I think that what you're probably going to see is that there's the Russian oil deliveries are going to continue, and they will probably rise. They will become more visible again, probably in about 2 months' time. This is what I've been told. By the way, a sign that Russian oil exports are unaffected overall is the fact that the ruble is continuing to strengthen. If there'd been a crash in Russian exports,
good point,
you would be seeing the ruble weaken.
Good point. Yep.
So, you know, that's one of the things to say. Yeah. Now, you know, the United States does economic deals. Russia's about to conclude apparently huge economic deals with India. Economic deals altogether are a good thing. I think that's how the United States does deals with countries like Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan. Kazakhstan has also done big economic deals with Russia recently. That's not something to be worried about or to be critical of. And they're not necessarily parts of geopolitical plays. It's the normal business that takes place in the world. And the fact that it's become terribly politicized is a bad thing. And we should not fall into the trap of thinking of it in that way.
Laurie says, don't you understand how hard it is for President Trump to move about?
Yeah, I do understand. Absolutely. I understand fully. But nonetheless, I still think that for the sake of his presidency, it is what he should do.
Yeah, I agree. He has to find a way to get out there. Yeah. Monty 1054 says, will the confrontational attitude in Europe towards Russia be able to survive when the war in Ukraine ends? Will there be anyone in Russia willing to amend relations with Europe?
Well, the last is a very, very good question. When I was there in June, and I went to the legal conference in St. Petersburg, and I spoke to people who had been lawyers, who had done work in Europe. Their law firms had made deals with Western European law firms, I was astonished to see how they were all telling me never again. How, you know, these, the most pro-Western community probably that you would find in Russia today, and it has turned its back on Europe entirely. So far from certain that the Russians would want to come back, this idea that there is this yearning in Russia to come back to Europe, I doubt it. As to what the Europeans are going to do, well, we'll just have to see how the politics in Europe start to develop. The pivotal country is Germany. If the IFDEB was able to break through in Germany, then things in Europe will change.
Jessica Orla says the Russian film The Thief is also superb.
Absolutely, yes. Russian cinema is really extremely good. And for those who are interested, the Russians also make brilliant adaptations of their novels. So if you find it difficult to wade your way, you know, to wade through Russian novels, then see the Russian adaptations of them. And by the way, Iranian kid, there's a Russian adaptation of Dr. Zhivago, the TV adaptation, and it is fascinating, very different from the David Lean film, and very interesting, and also I think extremely good.
Miss Texas G says, what good will it do for Trump to go out and have a rally if he's repeating what Susie Wiles tells him to say?
Well, indeed, it would do him no good at all. And I hope that's why I said what he needs to do is to listen rather than to speak. Trump, I don't know how good he is at listening, if I have to be honest.
Good point. Iranian Kiddo says, you have Reliance Industries, India's biggest importer of Russian oil, stated on November 20th that they have stopped importing crude from Russia, promoting Russia to offer the lowest rates in 2 years to the Indian market.
Yes, I know. And I'm well aware of all of those stories. And I'm very well aware of what Reliant is also saying. But, you know, bear in mind, that is what they're saying. What actually happens in the market, and I know a lot more about markets because I used to work in the shipping industry, may be very different. So you can have oil that is labeled as Kazakh oil, for example, and it might still be flowing to India, but it's actually, its actual provenance is Russia. And Reliant is one Indian refiner, and there are others too. I understand, and I, you know, got some context here. I understand that everything will be, is expected to come back to normal in about 2 months' time. And of course, Putin is going to be in India at the end of this week, and he's going to sign all kinds of arms deals. And there's talk about an agreement on energy, and probably that will be nuclear energy. But I would not be surprised. In fact, it's a certainty that discussions about the oil trade will also happen. And the reason is straightforwardly because this is very beneficial to India too.
Matlis X says, what is going on with Japan and their new prime minister poking China? Do they not know history?
Well, I'm sure they know history very, very well in China. Now, it's been explained to me by somebody who wrote an email to me. He said that it's been somewhat misunderstood that the prime minister was asked a question and replied to a question, perhaps without fully thinking through the answer. But my sense is that Japan has been somewhat unnerved is an understatement, by the rise of China over the last 20 years. And they become, I think, worried about this, unduly worried, I'm going to suggest. And there is also a degree within Japan of reassertion of, you know, their own history and their own modern history. And I think I think they haven't understood that they need to calibrate this very carefully, because it's not just China, by the way, but other Asian states that are listening to.
Iranian Kiddo says, and let's not forget, U.S. struck a major deal with Armenia and Azerbaijan in Russia's backyard, and also a major blow to Iran as the corridor would run along Iran's border.
Well, indeed. I mean, I think the Armenian business, I think Azerbaijan, by the way, will drift back into a good relationship with Russia eventually. They're going through tensions which have abated and then stirred up again. But ultimately, as I understand it, Russia has Azerbaijan by the throat. They want to close off Azerbaijan's oil industry. It's very easy for them to do. And again, I'm not going to go into the details of this, but Armenia is a major blow for the Russians and something that has upset the Russians deeply. And going back a couple of years, again, the Russians were asleep at the wheel when the changes in Armenia happened, just as they were asleep at the wheel when the Maidan events took place also.
Unfortunate for Armenia.
Oh, a tragic for Armenia. Yeah. And not good for Iran.
Because Turkey's going to take advantage of this.
Yeah. Absolutely, it is, which is exactly what it's doing.
Yeah. Ninja Roo says, Alexander Petushko's fantasy films are amazing.
Yes.
Iranian Kiro says, Tulsi is too milquetoast to ever arouse any ire from the regime she helps whitewash.
Yeah. Well, I don't know her myself at all. I've never had any dealings with her. I've met one individual who knows her well, and I don't think he would disagree with your characterization. Just a sec.
Laurie says, Russian site Yandex seems open and uncensored.
Yes. Yandex is apparently quite effective. It's a very, very good search engine.
It's a good tech company. It's not only search. Yeah, a lot of things. Yeah, absolutely. Johnski says, Karen Callis of the should be sent to Moscow so she can demand to see the manager.
True enough.
Sparky says, President Trump would understand the crowd booing an issue or politician. That's how a Trump rally could help.
Yes.
True. And Susie Wiles would not want that.
No, exactly. Well, I'm pretty sure she's the reason why he's not doing it.
Yeah. Iranian Kiddo says, I'll watch the Russian version of Dr. Zhivago. Thank you for the recommendation.
Yes.
And I think, Alexander, wait, I think that's everything.
Well, my goodness. Well, great live stream.
Let me check again, but yeah, go ahead.
Well, Iranian Kiddo, you and I obviously have a shared interest in films. We should have a discussion one day with each other and talk about films. There is a side of me that always hankered to become a film critic, by the way.
Yeah, Bo Omega says, traveling with Russ on YT shows day-to-day life in Russia. Looks like a modern 21st century minus the crime and litter and blight.
Well, it is, yes.
And... Texas G says, I researched if any other president of the U.S. in the past 40 years had an MRI on their brain. That sounds like the intro to an SNL skit, but the research came up with none of them. The fact that Trump's doctors are suggesting he take one is disturbing, especially since he wants to go to war.
Yes.
I don't remember presidents talking about MRIs either, if they've had them or not. I don't remember them ever saying something publicly about it.
Yeah. Nor do I.
Jamila says, Sudan and Ethiopia, they got trouble, especially because the Ethiopian leader killed the Orthodox Christian church because he's an evangelical Christian. And they say Orthodox came from Israel. We need better news.
Yeah. You're telling me things I'm not informed about. There was this awful war in Ethiopia, which seems to have abated. And Ethiopia, of course, has joined the BRICS, but there's a lot going on there, no doubt. And Sudan is a horror. But it's the trouble is there's only so many hours in the day. And we've had to cope with these and we've had to deal with these massive pressing issues like the war in Ukraine, the conflicts in the Middle East, Venezuela. Now, we haven't given time as much time as we should have done to events in Africa. And I hope one day we will.
Deep Troop says, please invite Martin Armstrong of Armstrong Economics.
We've had him before and we will have him again, no doubt.
And P-Ted says, don't forget the great Hollywood films made in 1943 set in Ukraine representing the resistance of a village to the Nazis.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
All right. That is everything, Alexander. Great live stream. Lots of good information. Great questions. And a big shout out and thank you to our moderators on YouTube, Zariel, Harry, Peter. Thank you so much for moderating. Was anyone else moderating today? I believe that's it. So thank you to our moderators on YT. Thank you to everyone that joined us on YouTube, on Rumble, on Odyssey, on Rockfin, and of course on Locals. Any closing thoughts, Alexander?
Well, we're certainly living in very, very interesting times. Ukraine, the story of Ukraine is ending, not because Witkoff is going to Moscow, but because the Russians have won the war. I mean, now I don't think anybody has any real doubt about that. The reason Witkoff is going to Moscow is because the Russians have won the war.
We've been saying this for a long time.
Exactly.
There would none of this would be going on if Russia was losing or in a stalemate, as they say. If there was a stalemate, none of this stuff would be going on.
Exactly.
Yeah. So keep that in mind. All right. That is it. We will come back with videos.
Yeah.
So videos on Alexander's channel, video on my channel, and possibly a video on the Duran as well on Venezuela.
Absolutely.
All right. Take care, everyone. Wait. One more. Alexander just came in. I got it. I caught it just in time. I think Alexander would love Andrei Rublev, 1966, directed by Tarkovsky. It's a movie based on the Russian religious icon painter. It has a beautiful black and white cinematography. Plan to rewatch it today.
I have watched it many, many times. I know that film very, very well. And it is a profoundly religious film. If you understand Orthodox theology, you will understand exactly what it is all about. It is about a man who falls into despair and rediscovers God. It is quite remarkable that a film like that was made in the Soviet Union in the 1960s. And it is even more remarkable that it was actually widely promoted in the Soviet Union, contrary to what many people believe, and shown without Tarkovsky's permission on Soviet television. Just
All right. On that note, take care, everybody.
Yeah.